Next on RadioSt.Pete.com, Peter's Proffer with Clearwater attorney Peter Tragos. The experienced lawyers at Tragos, Sartes, and Tragos discuss common legal questions, providing insight into the legal process and covering current events as they relate to the legal field.
Welcome back to another episode of Peter's Proffer. We are still here. The coronavirus is still going strong, but so is the podcast, so is the law firm. So we're going to keep bringing you information that we're getting and disseminating things we think are important for the public locally and not locally to hear from us. And today's episode, in honor of National Takeout Day, is going to focus on the coronavirus's effect on local businesses, small businesses, and specifically restaurants. Me and Pete are going to talk about kind of the general effect it's having on the economy and on the local restaurants and on restaurants in general nationwide. And then we're going to have some of our friends locally who own restaurants and are going through a bunch of changes and struggling to make ends meet literally because of the coronavirus. We're going to have some of them on at the end and we're going to interview them individually. And they're going to explain to you what it's like for them, what they're going through, and what you can do to help keep them running, to help keep their employees getting paid. So it's a great episode. We can all work together as a local community so that we can make it through this and come out better on the other side. All right, Pete. So what I want to do just to kind of open this podcast up before we get to the interviews for some local restaurants and what they're going through, let's talk a little bit, and I'll have you start since you know more about this and a lot of your background has to do with this. Talk about the economy generally, what's happening, what it looks like going forward, and what we're really going to deal with here over the next few months to even years.
You know, the economy question is kind of a double-edged sword. There are some businesses that are making an absolute fortune right now. I mean, look at Amazon. They have to hire people because they can't keep up with the demand. 3M just got a billion-dollar contract to produce surgical masks that normally cost 50 cents, and they're selling them for $4 each. But what we're seeing is small business in local economies are starting to suffer. Businesses like, obviously, restaurants, dry cleaners, the people that you deal with day in and day out, those folks that really depend on local traffic are really getting beaten up bad.
Right. And I mean, restaurants are just getting crushed because you think about it. A lot of times people aren't going there just for the food, but they go for the ambiance, the experience, things like that. And people have to eat every day. When they go to work, they go out to eat. And now we have nobody or a lot less people going to work. A lot less people going out to eat. All the dining rooms being closed. So nobody actually eating in the restaurant. So it's really crushing the restaurant industry. But like in the economy of a whole, how does this affect the economy as a whole when there's some small businesses that stop making it, restaurants that stop making it? It's not just those businesses that suffer.
Understand that we're all interconnected one way or another. You know, we may be lawyers, but you know, we earn our living lawyering and then we take our money and go spend it at restaurants, or we go to the department store and buy clothes, and then the people that work at the department store that sell you clothes, they make money, at which point they buy services, needing their lawyers or their doctors or their accountants. So it really is going to have a complete impact on our economy, which is why you're seeing the stock market plummet. It's not that anything really happened that the entire stock market's in a tank, other than the fear of
the unknown,
of the investors recognizing that I don't know what profits are going to look like for this particular business or this industry for the next quarter. And frankly, people are basically saying that second quarter, which is April, May, June, is pretty much shot for this year.
Right. And it's one big circle, right? So, I mean, if a business closes, then whoever owns the building that they are renting from ends up losing money as a landlord. Insurance company loses money because the premiums aren't getting paid anymore because the restaurant's gone under or the business has gone under. And it just goes round and round and round. And it also really hits the employees of these businesses. People are getting laid off. People are getting furloughed. People are getting their hours cut. So it's affecting big and small, owner and employee, landlord and tenant. It's affecting everybody in the economy because of the fear of the unknown, combined with the CDC guidelines and the stay-at-home orders and things like that. So let's transition a little bit and talk about what these quote-unquote stay-at-home orders, or some people are calling them the safer-at-home orders. What are those look like? These things are popping up in counties and cities. There's disagreements within the states, within the county and city. Like Pinellas County may not agree with St. Pete. Hillsborough County may not agree with Tampa. What are these stay-at-home orders actually saying?
Let's start with some foundations. A stay-at-home order is not martial law, meaning that the military has not gone out in the streets and taken control.
Yeah, you're not getting arrested if you get leave your house.
There are states like California and New York where San Francisco and New York City have implemented very stringent stay-at-home orders, basically saying do not leave because they're so densely populated that they have no choice but to stop and curtail people's movements.
Because there are people literally on top of each other.
Right. And in fact, in some jurisdictions, New York being one of them, the orders go as far as to implement some very serious penalties and fines that we'll talk about here in a minute.
So when we're talking about the stay-at-home orders, what they actually say is for non-essential movements and items, stay at home. Forget about those non-essential activities. If you need to go to the doctor, if you need to go to the grocery store, if you need to go to work to make a paycheck, as long as your work is following the CDC guidelines, you're staying 6 feet apart from your coworkers, there's less than 10 people in the room, things like that, then going to work is still an essential item.
And realize there's no standard. It's not like you go to the library of county or municipal forums and pull out the stay at home order. A lot of these are ad hoc. They kind of make it up as they
ad
go.
Ad hoc means just case by case basis,
sure.
Basically.
And you know, New York's is different than San Francisco's. Pinellas County's may be different than Tampa's. The state of Florida does not have a stay-at-home order, and the governor has indicated, at least up to now, that he does not intend to do that. Although municipalities like Miami, Hillsborough County, and today Pinellas,
Tampa, really, because Hillsborough County said they're not going to, but the Tampa mayor said she was.
Sure.
So it's really, you know, there's all these weird disagreements, and the mayor of St. Pete said he wants to do it, but he would prefer it to be uniform, so everybody in Pinellas County is doing the same thing, and they're not out there on an island on their own. So that, what do you do? If you work in St. Pete, but you live in Clearwater, do you go to work? If you work in Clearwater and live in St. Pete, do you go to work? And so that makes things very difficult on people.
And he's thinking about his business constituents. If I can't go and have lunch or dinner or buy food at a restaurant in St. Pete, I don't want all those customers to go up to Clearwater or right over the border to Pinellas Park to do it.
Exactly. Just in some other city, even though it's 5 minutes away.
Right.
And we're so interconnected here in the Tampa Bay area, and there are cities and regions like that across the United States where nobody really thinks anything different between Pinellas County and Hillsborough County. It's a 15-minute drive over the bridge, and you're there. So when we're dealing with this stuff, it's really hard to differentiate county to county and city to city. So these stay-at-home orders, they really don't make much clear, because what's essential versus what's non-essential, there are some gray areas. So what are they actually doing to police this? What is the penalty if you get caught out when there's a stay-at-home order?
You know, it depends. Like I alluded to earlier, in New York, if you get caught and you're not an essential person, because again, they're so stringent, it's a $5,000 fine. There is talk generally about the new bill that passed today that if anybody knowingly has COVID-19, and goes out and infects somebody else, they may charge him with some sort of terrorism. Here in Pinellas County, we heard today, and I don't know if it's true or not because I haven't read all of the final details yet, but it looks like the law enforcement are going to be giving people warning letters. Now, what that means, I have no clue.
Are they going to document it? Is it going to be 3 warning letters, then you get a fine? All that stuff hasn't been hashed out. People don't realize, and we've been on rules committees, and I think we've talked about it on podcasts before, how much goes into making a rule. Some people complain about rules or laws. They think they're stupid. They don't understand why they happen. There are 50 lawyers sitting in a room, all on different sides of the aisle. Some are defense heavy, some are plaintiffs heavy, and they come to an agreement as to every word, basically, that's in a law, what the punishment is, what the remedy is, what you do if somebody breaks it, whether this word should be there. So coming up with this stuff on the fly, having people vote on it, having law enforcement police it and enforce it, is very difficult to do. People don't understand how hard it is where you give a cop that's used to doing DUI stops, and now he's got to figure out whether or not this person is partaking in an essential activity. You know, that's very difficult. And how do you know if someone's on the road? Well, I'm just going to the grocery store, or I'm going to pick up takeout, or I'm walking in the street for exercise. I'm walking on the sidewalk for exercise. I'm at the park for exercise. because all that stuff is in there as essential activities. You know, so it's really hard for law enforcement officers. It's really hard for politicians because there is a large element of self-policing that has to go on when you're doing this kind of stay-at-home order.
And you're right. When you're talking about enacting something this complicated and this far-reaching, you know it's not going to be perfect when you basically made the decision over the course of a week when, you know, in the course of normal legislation, something like this would take a year.
Multiple cycles, oh, multiple drafts, multiple edits, everybody having a problem with it, other subcommittees jumping in saying, well, it affects our subcommittee, so we need to have an opinion on it. Yeah, I mean, this stuff takes forever usually to go through. And then once it goes through, it's still argued about and appealed, and different case law and different judges have to make different decisions based on it, even when the law is approved and goes through.
Because I'll tell you, one of the things that we're going to find is going to be a problem if this goes forward is Pinellas County, for example. There are a number of independent municipalities that reside technically in the jurisdiction of Pinellas County. So Pinellas County has St. Pete, Largo, Tarpon Springs,
Clearwater.
That's right. All of those municipalities are independent. So they have their own police forces, many of them. They have their own fire departments. So the question now is going to be is, I'm not a resident of, in quotes, Pinellas County. I'm a resident of the city of Clearwater. Does this pertain to me? And really what happens in the way that law and order is normally dealt with in Pinellas County with all the municipalities is there are cross orders between the cities, the individual municipalities, and the county that basically say we adopt whatever the county did, that with his uniformity. Well, that hasn't had a chance to happen yet because those municipalities haven't even had an opportunity to see this new order, let alone vote on it.
And these are big decisions for mayors. You know, we did the Boss Mayor podcast. We talked to George Kritikos. We've talked about mayors and what they do. And I think even when Judge Greer was on, he talked about being the city commissioner. They don't usually make decisions of this magnitude and have to disagree. Usually it's kind of some uniformity. Like you said, we agree. We all want to play nice. We all want to do what's best for everybody. But right now, it's kind of hard. They're all like mini presidents right now, dealing with their cities. And it's much more than just being a figurehead of your city being a mayor right now. So it's big decisions for all of them. What I do like is what I've noticed in almost every stay-at-home order or safer-at-home order before it really gets crazy and you have to lock yourself in your house for 2 weeks, is they have said, go get takeout, support your local restaurants. We're going to talk to some restaurateurs today. That's really important. You need to still be doing that if you can, if you're financially able to. Order food out, support those restaurants so they're still there when this is all over because, I mean, it's crushing that industry.
I think the spirit of this, especially for Pinellas County, is they recognize that we are densely populated here in Tampa Bay and that our risk for an out-of-control exposure is exponentially greater than, let me just give you an example, Ocala or some rural county. But the reality is this, they don't really want you to barricade yourself in your closet. What they want you to do is not have contact with other people. So that's why
it really has to be a balance.
Yeah.
They still want you to partake in the economy so everything doesn't just crash, but they don't want you to be stupid and go to the beach with 1,000 of your friends. So, you know, it's really a balancing act, but we want to focus on what we can do to help the community. It's a local podcast. We want to do what we can to give back, and we want to educate the community. We want to educate the public and the people that are listening, and this is a big form of education for us to show you what some of these local restaurants are going through. So for now, we're going to pause this part of the podcast, and we're going to transition into the interviews from different restaurants of differing sizes dealing with different issues based on what they were before the coronavirus and how they're adapting in these times. All right, and we're here now with Mike Baskovich, who's the owner of the Famous Greek, aka Famous Greek Salads, over in Safety Harbor, Florida. And they have a restaurant that specializes in catering and in-house dining experiences. So, Mike, why don't you tell everybody a little bit about your restaurant, where it came from, how long it's been there, and what you guys are doing to deal with the coronavirus?
Sure. Well, thanks for talking with me about it, but my dad bought the restaurant about 12 years ago, and it was already a Famous Greek before then, but he kind of made some changes when he arrived, and when I graduated from college, I started the catering side with the restaurant, so we do, which is a small place, we just have 12 tables inside, but We do a lot of takeout. We have dine-ins, obviously, and we specialize in catering with Greek. We also do Mexican and Italian, which sounds kind of silly, but it goes over well because a lot of our regular customers enjoy using us.
So when you say that you started the catering portion, what types of events or things would you cater for? I assume it's more than 10 people for the most part.
Correct. Yeah, most of our catering, we do Monday through Friday for the most part, because we like to specialize in office lunches with pharmaceutical reps.
So when you say you cater for big office lunches and things like that, obviously that kind of goes out the window with the CDC guidelines saying, you know, no more gatherings of 10 people, so people probably aren't having those big office lunches. What are you guys trying to do to set your restaurant up for success when dealing with the closure of the dining room and the closure of any office parties or catering events of more than 10 people?
Yeah, well, I like to specialize in the Monday through Friday lunches. I mean, there's generally going to be big groups, so I don't want to have to work nights and weekends. So we wanted to specialize in that, which has worked out great until now. But yeah, since people aren't gathering in groups, that's basically gone. We used to do between 10 and 20 catered lunches every day. We deliver all over Tampa Bay. I had a full staff we had our own drivers. We have a full staff that comes and prepares the food early in the morning. So now that's gone, and our dine-ins usually fill up every day, and now that's gone. So we're moving just to takeout. That's where the demand's, you know, obviously at, because that's the necessity. But curbside is what everyone wants. So we never did that before because our parking lot is crazy. And I didn't want my staff running through the parking lot or have people trying to park in weird spots. So I create a promotional video on Facebook and try to get it started. And I mean, it's working. People are coming. But, I mean, sales are down 70%. So only so much we can do.
Yeah, so we saw the video. We're going to post the video when we post our podcast at the same time so everybody can watch that commercial. It's a really cool, really fun commercial for you guys to do to show that now you're doing takeout, and you guys do a promo code on there too. What do people get if they put in the promo code?
They get a free spread with pita, small, large. You get choose. We got tzatziki, flavored hummuses, garlic and feta spread. So
awesome.
That's included if you use the promo code.
Awesome. So you guys have tried to do some promotional videos. You're doing some promo codes, some giveaways, things like that to entice people to pick up curbside. Have you seen an uptick in orders of what you used to get for to-go orders?
Yes. That was already about half of our lunch business was takeout.
Oh, okay.
So we already had a decent following for it, but I mean, it's up a little bit because people that used to come in for dining are now taking it and eating it somewhere. So that has increased.
So when you say that 70% or sales are down 70%, do you mean total sales, including catering, dine-in, takeout, everything?
Correct. Yeah. So we're up. Our sales are about, you know, are down a lot. We're getting 30% of what we used to get. Yeah. Just by eliminating two-thirds of our business.
Mike, let me ask you a question about just the inventory. I mean, realizing that as a restaurant, you never know what somebody's going to order for the most part when they walk in your door. I mean, obviously you have an idea because you budget about what you buy, but how is it affecting you guys? Obviously, you were preparing for some large catering jobs, I'm guessing, for this week and or the week that just went past. Mm-hmm. And what's happening to all that food?
Right. Yeah. Well, we're actually fortunate in that part. I mean, for anyone who's been to the restaurant, it's very small. Our kitchen is as small as it looks as far as from the dining room. So we get fresh chicken delivered every day. We get fresh produce delivered every day just because out of necessity, we couldn't store it. If we try to store more, when would we go through in one day?
Sure.
So we were still able to get through it pretty quickly. Didn't have to worry about anything. But now it's more about, for us, our preparation. So we used to make big batches of hummus, big batches of tzatziki, big batches of a lot of stuff. So we've had to cut down kind of how we're going to prepare for, you know, the week coming up. And it's definitely weird. And it's something that I'm personally just having to go through every part of our business and figure out how we can be as lean as possible.
I guess what I'm hearing you saying is, for example, when I make hummus at home, I know it's like, you know, half a clove of garlic and 2 ounces of olive oil. You're used to making it by the, you know, by the ton.
Right.
So
yeah.
When you're,
I was working with my chef today on it. When we have our recipes, our par levels all set for our normal business. And we just took everything down about a fourth. So we just took our recipe down and put everything a quarter of the way in and you get the smaller batch.
So have you kind of figured out then that that's the amount, or are you still playing kind of trial and error with how much you're going to be selling each week? Because it's been what? It's been 1 or 2 weeks since they've shut down dining rooms altogether.
Right. Yeah. Well, the difficult part too is how fast it kind of went from kind of things slowing down to say, okay, now we're going to do dine-ins going to 50% capacity, and now we're going to take away dine-ins. Like, it was all kind of a rapid turn.
Right. They didn't give you any time to adjust, kind of, basically.
We're making decisions. Yeah, we're making decisions every day as far as, you know, kind of what we need to do. Which, I mean, that's what restaurants do. You need to project your labor. You need to project your food costs. So it's kind of hard when there's all these things that you have no data to go back on. A lot of places go from, what were my sales last year, this week? And you kind of go off that, but there's nothing for us to compare with this. We don't know how long it's going to last either, so.
Have you guys
figure out daily stuff?
Have you guys implemented any different cleaning or sanitizing procedures since all this happened?
Yes, definitely. So once kind of everything kind of came out, I personally sanitized the whole front of the house, all the booths, all the bathrooms, every single part. We have little sanitizer buckets, so everything was wiped down initially. Now we had to take it to another level, so. We kind of are rethinking how people are inserting their credit cards now compared to us trying to take it from them into our computers, which we weren't set up really to do. We kind of had to figure it out. Now we're sanitizing the pens for people to sign. We have a clean pen section and a used pen section. Usually, you don't think about it before, but I'm sure those pens are passed around.
Sure.
So I kind of had to go through each section and rethink how there's going to be zero chance of anything spreading between people. So we're getting better and better every day because it's kind of like our goal, but I mean, difficult still.
So how do you control the delivery process for the curbside? Because I'm thinking, you know, they're putting in all these procedures like no more than 10 people, make sure you stay 6 feet away. So how do I know if the delivery guy that's going to, you know, drive me my food or drop off the food at the curbside, you know, has just washed his hands or the cleanliness? How are you kind of putting in procedures for whoever's delivering the curbside meal?
Right. Curbside's very easy because that's my staff. So we are sanitizing the handles when we're going inside and out of the restaurant. Our kitchen staff is obviously sanitizing everything they're using. We're wearing gloves, obviously. So there really isn't a... It doesn't seem like there's a chance for anything kind of to be passed, and that's the goal, is to make it a 0% chance that anything is going to be coming from any of my staff to the customer. And it's the best thing that's helped us is people being able to order online. It's paid online. When they arrive, you know, we get the notification. So we're kind of just able to walk it out for them. No one has to touch anything except for us. So
perfect.
It's working out good. It's the people that kind of, you know, kind of want to come in and pay cash and credit. It's kind of where extra sanitizing is going on. We follow them out the door and stuff. But
so you're still in it.
Yeah. Are you still taking cash?
Yeah. As of right now, I mean, people are coming in taking cash. I mean, that's how some people want to pay. We're only allowing like two people to come in and take into the dining room, pick the takeout or stuff, but it hasn't been too much of a problem.
Yeah, and I don't think from any of the, you know, stay-at-home orders or any of the CDC guidelines, I don't see anything against that. They're actually even putting in some of these stay-at-home orders to still support the local small businesses, support your local restaurants.
Right.
That's why we're doing this podcast. Also, we want people to understand kind of what, especially, I mean, our business is, you know, we're dealing with changes in our business and trying to work from home and trying to keep things rolling as much as we can, but it really hits the restaurant industry hard because you take out such a big chunk of what they do and why people like to eat out. I mean, the food's amazing at Famous Greek, but a lot of people like to have, you know, it catered for lunch, or they like to come in and experience, you know, dining out there or whatever. So it's not just food quality why people eat out, but it's also kind of the experience of it. And that's something that just kind of goes away. And you talked about your staff. What are you doing with your employees? What's your plan? Have you guys had to, you know, do any furloughs, any layoffs, any temporary layoffs, firings? What's kind of the plan with your staff right now?
Well, most of my staff was full time. The only area where I kind of had we had to take the dishwashers off the schedule because we don't have any dishes. So I'll take out.
Right.
I had a catering staff that would come in early, but most of them that helped me out are retired, and this is kind of going to work out for them.
Nice.
And when it comes back, I'm lucky to have them. Hopefully, when everything's over. But my full time staff, we've had to reduce hours, and that was the hardest part. Having to talk to everybody, saying we're not going to have any sort of sales to be able to have come in for your normal shifts. So.
What about like your wait staff? That are obviously used to tips being a portion of their income or a good portion of their income.
Right.
How's the effect on them?
The customer's been very generous since this has all happened, and it's been pretty public that restaurants are struggling.
Sure.
We have a lot of regular customers. We get to know them very well, and they know our servers. So everyone's been very generous with the tips. We used to have kind of a two-server system. Now we're down to one. And I'm kind of helping out, and then, you know, tips are going to the servers. So they're still doing fine in that part. It's just, you know, I'm kind of half staff for the servers, so when they do work, it's nice that they're still able to get a decent amount of tips.
So what's kind of the long-term plan? Are you just going to adjust, like you said, day by day? What would it take for, you know, restaurants to close their doors in times like this? How close are we to that? What's kind of the long-term plan?
Again, things change so fast. The hard part is you go through all this work to make a change, and then something else comes out that you're going to have to make adjustments to that.
So you try to adjust to 50% capacity, and then all of a sudden that's gone.
Right, exactly. So I don't want to put, you know, 2 days worth of work in and trying to promote something and have something new come out to where it may be taken away, or I may have to close next week, or there's only so much I can do because I'm limited on staff too. So I'm trying to, you know, save on labor costs as well. But one of my ideas going forward, as long as this would hang out, is, I don't know if you guys have heard of the ghost kitchen idea, to where restaurants, now that it's just takeout and delivery, I don't have to have a Greek theme. You know, we cater Mexican, we cater Italian, and we're able to prepare, you know, a lot of foods. It's a commercial kitchen. So at some point, we may move into having almost like two or three different menus just to be able to promote and have something else out there and get some different food for my regular customers.
So you're saying like chicken sandwiches, hamburgers, pizza, whatever. You got the kitchen back there. You got the chefs. You might be able to kind of do it all while people, they like your restaurant. They like you guys. They know it's clean. So no matter what it is they want to eat that night, they can just order it from you guys.
Yeah, I mean, we're lucky to have, we have a great customer base that are very loyal and they want to support us, but how many times can you eat the same thing in 1 week? You know, some people
come in a
couple times a week, but.
Yeah,
but
that's really, really smart.
We already do the catering for the Mexican and the Italian. We make our own sauces, our own enchiladas, chimichangas, meatballs, chicken parm. So if we decide to kind of go there, it would just, the reason why we hadn't done it before, it'd be weird to have that kind of coming into a dining room. you look at your table next and you got chicken enchiladas and chips and salsa. And the other guy's eating a gyro. So this kind of will open up new doors, but, you know, I'm also kind of hesitant to, because that'll take a lot of effort to promote and prepare for, and I don't know how much I'm going to sell. So that, you know, might be a little bit out there, but it's going to be longer than a few weeks or a month, and we'll definitely start looking at other options.
Yeah, but hey, well, listen, let's be real. Greek food makes everybody else's food taste better.
Yep, agreed.
Awesome, Mike. Well, I appreciate you coming on. We're going to promote it as much as we can. We're really trying to help out the restaurateurs. We know there's a lot of them out there that, you know, are going through the same thing you are. I think it's a great idea to just do a ghost kitchen like you talked about and just provide as much service as you can, and people will keep supporting you guys and keep ordering food from you guys and doing that curbside delivery, especially now that you're making it as easy as possible to do everything online and just show up to pick up your food. So, again, thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Nice talking with you.
And we're here with my friend Gary Stavrakos. Actually, my daughter and his daughter are the best of friends and have been in school together from grade school now into high school. And Gary owns a restaurant by the name of Acropole. It's a family restaurant. There are two. The one that Gary owns and runs is on Starkey Road in Largo. So, Gary, tell us about Acropole. You know, how did it start? How long have you been running it? Kind of tell us about your Starkey Road location, how big it is, and kind of what you serve food-wise.
Well, been there 21 years in October. It's a diner style restaurant, mostly eat in. So, you know, Greek, it's got like a Greek flair to it, from grilled cheese to filet mignon, gyro sandwiches, the whole nine yards. Yeah.
So when you say it's mostly a dine in restaurant, how have you guys dealt with the COVID-19 virus, the CDC guidelines? How did you deal with the transition from 50% capacity to nothing? How has that kind of hit your restaurant specifically?
It's hit hard. We're trying to do what we can, and a lot of our local customers are supporting us. Thank God. You know, obviously business has dropped tremendously, but we still, I'm just trying to keep my employees busy and get them a paycheck every week. And
Are you guys keeping a
good food?
Are you guys keeping a full staff, or have you kind of cut the hours, or how are you dealing with having so much less business and less work for the employees that you have?
Yeah, I'll tell you, Pete, we were at, 18 to 20 employees a day to, 4 to 6 now a day.
Wow.
So, and that's the tough part for me, you know?
Sure. Yeah. So,
right. 'Cause a lot of your employees, if I'm not mistaken, you've had for, a long time.
Yeah, I have cooks from day one still working with me. So it's hard for me to tell them, hey, stay home and, I'll let you know what's going to happen type of thing. So
what have you guys changed to try to kind of adapt to the times that we're dealing with right now, having nobody dine in? Are you providing curbside delivery? Are you providing, in-home delivery? Have you done anything extra online? Do you have promotional codes? What are you doing to try to just continue getting the food to the people that want it?
Yeah, we're doing a lot of Facebook advertising. I have a lot of elderly people that come and eat breakfast every day, and some of them don't want to come out. I deliver to them, and if you're close by and I'm not busy, we will deliver. Curbside is no problem. A lot of people just come in and order, though they don't even call, because I have a lot of regular customers. And some of them don't even know you can't sit down and eat,
Yeah.
I have to turn them away. So
have you guys done anything extra as far as sanitizing or cleaning procedures? Have you changed anything as far as that goes?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. It's wiping down counters, washing hands frequently and, just disinfecting. The only good thing about closing the dining rooms, I have some of my employees, we did the deep cleaning of everything, which is good,
Yeah. Let me ask you about your dining rooms. Since you actually have three, if I'm not mistaken, in that location, what's your seating capacity?
155, I think, something like that.
All right. And because I know your restaurant, obviously, I know you guys serve everything from breakfast or all early breakfast all the way through dinner. How has this change affected your inventory? I mean, I presume that you buy food in advance, realizing what you're going to be selling for the next week. All of a sudden, the CDC says nobody can eat out in restaurants. How has that affected
you? Well, that's it just goes with, managing a restaurant. We're making smaller portions and, ordering what we need to order only. And, just being very careful and making sure everything's fresh.
What's your guys' long-term plan? So not knowing how long this is going to last, are you guys going to try to, pump stuff up on Facebook, get more stuff going on your website? What would it take, I guess, for a restaurant of your size with that seating capacity to have to close the doors if it gets that bad?
I guess it's just time. And I mean, like you said, we're going to do what we can, get our name out there as, on Facebook and, maybe start doing deliveries and just see how long this will last, because the president's saying by Easter, I think we'll be all right. But if it's not by Easter, who knows what's going to happen,
So besides, just ordering your food from your restaurant, what can people do locally to help your restaurant out? I mean, obviously, coming and ordering and getting the curbside or getting some kind of delivery, tipping the employees that are doing the delivery. What else can they do there to just help you guys keep it going through this time?
Like you said, I guess that's about it. They say gift cards.
They were
talking about on the news and stuff like that, but to keep us going. And like I seen some people doing that. And yesterday was a better day. They had the takeout, National Takeout Day, which brought my sales up a little bit, which was great. And, it's just, like we said, go out and eat at your local restaurant, help your locally family-owned business get through this.
How about your wait staff? I mean, the people that are actually in the front of the house that depend on the tips for their business, how have they been affected?
It's bad. I rotate them. But like today, I was so happy. The girl that was working made $100-some, in tips, which was awesome, but that was only one girl,
So are people tipping more?
Yes, a lot more. like I said, I used to have five girls, you know, but now it's 1 to 2 on each, you know, shift, and I'm only open 8 to 8 instead of 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. You know.
Right. So, and we'll hopefully be able to, you know, get people to talk about it more, get people to talk about your restaurant more, and spread the word so they can keep rolling through this time and be here to still serve the great food after all this is done.
And if I'm not mistaken, you have a full bar at that restaurant.
Yes, and I'm a fan. I guess from what they say, we've been selling it to go too. So come and have a drink and a gyro.
Even better. So there's an added benefit. How many restaurants can you also get some good stuff to go with you? Well, Gary, thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate you having me on.
And I've got with us a good friend of mine. Her name is Nan Nguyen. Her family actually owns a string of Asian restaurants. They own Ocean Blue in Clearwater, my favorite sushi restaurant. And they also own 3 Halong Bay restaurants, one in St. Pete, one in Largo, and one in Dunedin, all of which have a combination of, you know, sushi, Chinese, and Vietnamese food. So, Nguyen, thank you very much for being with us here. Tell us what it's like.
Thank you.
I mean, you have 4 restaurants, and now the order basically is don't go out and eat. How is this affecting your business?
Well, first, thank you, Peter, for allowing, you know, for me to express about our business. So it's been the last 2 weeks been changing dramatically. So right now, definitely, it's a big impact for us as a restaurant industry. Right now, our staff, I cut half of it. They're going to, you know, rotate. So I have to split it out I want to make sure all my staff have some income, you know. So that's why I want to stay open so my staff can have, and definitely I stay on the top of the game, meaning we sanitize, we disinfect every customer. The pen, when they come in, they sign, they have to take it with them. We don't, you know, we take everything so serious now because the health of my staff are the top priority for me right now.
So what have you guys done to kind of combat the coronavirus and all of the restrictions put on by the CDC? Has your curbside delivery or your takeout had a big uptick? Are you promoting it online for people to use the website? What have you done to try to promote sales in the out-of-diner experience?
Okay, so I have 4 restaurants. The 2 that that already, I have a lot of takeout, which is the Ocean Blue in Clearwater and Halong Bay in Dunedin, because we have partnered with Uber Eats, DoorDash, you know, all the delivery partner. So right now, so we are okay with that because people already know that we're doing that. The other 2, the one in St. Pete and the one in Largo, we just joined Uber Eats just today. So we put on Facebook, and definitely it's because of, you know, our great name, you know, great food and great atmosphere, so it's word of mouth too. So many, many people too, like we have to definitely, like I mentioned before, my staff, health and the customer are top priority. So we have to follow precaution, everything. Like, for example, I put the menu out at the door. So when regular customer or customer already know we open, they walk in and look at the menu and then call us. So then my server, which has now become, you know, a packer, so she pick up the phone and get the order, and then when we ready, the food ready, we just call them. They be in the car, either in the car or out at the, you know, in front door. So they coming in, and I really try to, you know, social distance. So we try to have a little, you know, more space because all our restaurants are kind of like big space. So that's a benefit of us. So we kind of like have a good social distance that we apply.
So are you guys
come in and pick up and delivery driver, they come in with the same method. Like they have to stand at least 4 or 5 feet away from each other, you know.
So are you guys doing any promotions or anything to promote the takeout more than usual? I know you said you have some consistent takeout business from a couple of the restaurants. Are you adding any promotional deals to the table?
Right now, no, because it's kind of like, because of I already, like I mentioned before, like I cut down my staff.
Okay.
So I just don't want to overwhelm my staff either, because right now, we all agree that our health is most important, you know, in a customer. So we want to take time. We don't want to be crowded in the kitchen either. So I have like 1-2 staff standing up front, 1-2 staff. So if I do promotion and we don't have enough, you know, time to make, you know, customer wait, and it's going to be create another problem. So right now, no, we just use what we have for the other. For the two locations that is already have a great amount of to-go and delivery. And I don't do anything special, like buy one Grand Prix, something like that. I don't do any of that.
Nan, let me ask you, realizing, I go to Ocean Blue a lot, and it's a sushi mm-hmm. restaurant, and sushi restaurants obviously have to not only be clean, but they have to be fresh. How is this change? Because obviously Ocean Blue is a big restaurant. And mm-hmm. how is your ability to buy inventory? How has that been affected?
So for inventory wise, we do at least 2 times a week delivery, because like you mentioned, Peter, like it have to stay fresh. So inventory wise, we don't have to not, because we never close, you know, continue open. We just follow the guideline through until now is like zero capacity dine in. So we just order just enough when it comes to fresh, you know. So, and also I still have like 2 other local vendors, which is they deliver twice a week, the same thing. So inventory-wise, it stay fresh. Everything is the same. It's nothing changed, or I have to throw away a lot of things because, like I said, I got frequent delivery from 4 different vendors that willing to do all of that too. So that's a little bonus for me as a sushi. As you know, it have to stay fresh.
Yeah. Let me ask you, just last question. Realizing mm-hmm. we're talking to people that have different types of restaurants of different sizes. You are a chain, Frank. There's 4 of restaurants. How long mm-hmm. can a restaurant group like yours, 4 restaurants, absorb this type of restriction right now? How long can you last?
So right now, definitely we're not making anything. If we're lucky, we just break even, you know, if we're lucky. So because of, as you know, that we have a big family, so it's kind of like, from my family perspective, we can hold this for maybe a couple months. If the thing flowing like this, you know, if the order flow like this, we can handle it for a couple months. But I can't say that as a, you know, for other chain or bigger chain or thing. Like it, each of us is different,
sure.
You know.
Nan, thank you very much for coming on with us. And thank you very much for keeping Ocean Blue and the How Long Bay restaurants open.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for having me. Thank you, Peter. And thank you for Peter, too.
You've been listening to Peter's Proffer with Clearwater attorney Peter Tragos. The experienced lawyers at Tragos, Sartes & Tragos discuss common legal questions, providing insight into the legal process and covering current events as they relate to the legal field. Find out more at TragosLaw.com.